The Queen's Gambit.
2, 3, and 4.
Oh my gosh. So we were going to try to do a recap of the whole season. That fell apart after episode 3. And then we were like, okay, we'll just add on 4. And holy shit.
I know. There was too much. We could not, even after 3, we're like, we got to recap it.
I know. There's so much. So much.
So let's get into 2 then.
Yes. Yeah, so 2 sees Beth get taken from the orphanage. She's adopted. And yet again, they set us up for the obvious, right? The adopted father looks like a complete creep.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, do you go by Betty? Like, ugh, gross. And I'm like, oh, they're going to take her home and he's going to molest her. It's not going to be good. And then expectations subverted again. Now, he's a creep he's a jerk.
He's a jerk, but he's just a run-of-the-mill jerk.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. He's just not interested in his wife, really disconnected, inattentive, but just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. He was not going to do anything like what you might think of the girl who gets taken home from the orphanage by some creepy family.
Exactly. And then she gets a beautiful room and you're like, oh, maybe this is all okay. But you feel like something bad is going to happen.
You do. So he takes off. She does begin her first tournament. She goes to the Kentucky State Chess Championship, I guess. She meets those twins that continue to pop in to the episode.
Hey, right. They're just always there.
I kind of like it.
I like them too.
Okay, so she goes to her first tournament in Kentucky. We see her kind of fish out of water, but also knowing more than lots of people. The first thing I wanted to talk about was playing towns.
Oh, yes.
That was an intense scene. It's like they've been circling each other, mm-hmm. and then they sit down across from each other, and there's just so much tension between them. Clearly sexual tension,
yes.
even though
yeah.
it's inappropriate to do anything about it, but it's really loaded when he's playing her. And she is clearly more off her game than he is. Just maybe from the age, right?
I don't think she doesn't know what this feeling is. Like, there's actual sexual tension, you're right. And to her, I think you see it in her face. Like, I'm like, oh no, she's gonna get distracted. She's gonna lose because she's like checking this guy out. I think it's a totally foreign concept to her. And this feeling in her is, what is this? You know, I think she's usually such a machine.
Yes.
When she goes to play. And now she's like, God.
Right. She's seeing something else besides chess. And then an interesting thing happens in that moment where you're like, she's getting too excited about watching him and playing against him. But she gets her period.
I know.
Her first period. It just shows she's a young girl.
Yes.
This is her first time. She has no idea what to do. And it was unexpected because you don't really know what's going on in that moment.
Yeah. And she doesn't know. She goes running out. You think she's sick or whatever. And it turns out she's getting her period. I mean, and then just shoves some toilet paper down there and goes back to play in the final for the Kentucky State Championship. You're like, you go, girl.
Yeah. So this was a moment I wanted to talk about as one of those moments of like, is this a woman clearly written by a man, or is this a man who has somehow transcended his simple, but just his solely male mind and really embodied a woman? What do you think?
So I don't really want to get this personal about my teenage years, but like I had like an exact moment like that.
Oh my goodness.
With a tennis tournament.
Okay.
And I did that exact. I had no idea what was going on. Away at a sleepaway camp. I never went to sleepaway camp per se. I went to a 1-week tennis camp in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. It was between 8th and 9th grade. I had actually gotten my period one time before, but like I had no idea. Exactly. Then I had no idea when the second time was coming. And so didn't have anything and was playing in the finals of the tournament. And I was like, what is happening? I go to the bathroom. I have no means of doing anything except taking a wad of toilet paper.
Yes.
And I'm like, which by the way, running around, bad idea. Right. Horrible, horrible. We don't even need to get into how uncomfortable and terrible that was. Also, P.S., wearing whites.
Right.
A white tennis skirt. So yeah, I literally, and then went out and won. And so,
okay. So this did happen like to me. He did.
Yes.
An amazing job.
Well, I mean, in those, given the circumstances, you know,
yes.
Like what else? I mean, I guess though, at least this one, this girl was giving her something, but she didn't know what to do with it. But I right. could almost probably have seen myself do that. Yeah, that's great. I don't get this thing and I got to go play. So this will have to do.
Yes.
So yes. Actually, yeah, I did.
I know. I was on the fence, but now you've pushed me over. I just thought it was impressive that he would think to so many men writing a 13-year-old girl or 15-year-old girl, whatever she is, would have just ignored her first period. It just would not. You don't have to show that.
You're
it's
right.
It's not, you know, you could easily just have that be like everything we do in the bathroom is never seen on screen.
Right? No, you're right. And this was in, again, we said before, this was based on a book. Presumably, this scene was in the book. So two men, really, because the author of the book, and then for them to include it in the show. I mean, I think because so much of this is about her wanting to be taken seriously as the best chess player, we'll get to that too, but not the best female, but was like to remind us that she is a woman doing this in a man's world, and her age, I think, like you said, that she is still a girl. I mean, just kind of figuring shit out like that, but she's got these other pressures.
Right. Because if this was a grown woman, you know, talk about me in finance, you're not going to talk about my period as stopping something because this is something I presumably I know how to handle with ease.
Yes, exactly.
But I thought it was a really good moment of that you're going beyond just writing a woman in a man's or a man in a woman's body and pretending like that alone makes it something different. This is really kind of getting what it's like to be a woman in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And it did also present kind of a nice moment for her mother to step up, that her now adopted mother, played by who's the
Mariel Heller.
Okay. And she, you know, she steps up and she says, I'm a shit wife essentially, but I can try to do something as a mother.
Right.
And it's kind of a sweet moment.
Yeah. And we're starting to learn, you know, by then a little bit about her, that she, you know, had a miscarriage and I think had wanted to be a mother, but it didn't work out. And now she's getting this chance at it much later in life, but she's realizing, you know what, maybe I could be good at this.
Yes.
And
she's got issues of her own, clearly.
Yes.
But she's trying, and we see a really nice arc in these three episodes with her mother. Before we move on to episode three, I wanted to close out the town stuff. What did you think was going on with them? Because he does come back in episode three, but there's so much other stuff to talk about.
So you mean just after episode two?
I mean, in episode three, when they meet again.
Oh,
and
you want to jump to that? Yeah, because we're on towns. Yeah, yes. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't.
But that was interesting.
It was very interesting. I liked that he came back, but then when he was like, "Do you want to go play chess in my room?" I'm like, okay. And he was clearly about to kiss her.
Like, she's finally of age. We can make this thing happen now.
And I don't know. I didn't think that. I know it sounds like such a line, and I think it was a line, but I'm also like, all right, that's cool. He seems like a nice guy. But then what was with the dude walking in? Were we supposed to think he was with the guy?
Or he definitely was.
Buddy? I mean, he's not just a buddy. But then he doesn't care that he clearly busted his boyfriend, if he was him, about to hook up with the chess girl?
I think probably bisexuality was not really something people understood then, right? So I think she takes offense, like, you're just fucking with me,
right?
Because
you're really,
but I think he is into her, because you're gay, meaning you're gay, not just that you're taken, which he clearly seemed to be,
right?
But that you're gay, and so you're not interested in me at all. But I don't think that's true. I do think he was into her, whether it's because of her chess brain or why, or maybe he's just into redheads. Who knows? But I really did think it was sincere, but I don't think she took it well there.
No. And again, that was sort of her first foray into anything, you know, sexual or with the opposite sex. And of course, you know, I think she thinks like she did something wrong. Like, what the fuck? Like, that's a bad first encounter.
It doesn't go well. Yeah, it doesn't go well either time with him.
No. When,
because she's playing with him and she gets her first period. And then she's like, yeah, let's go back to the room. And then your boyfriend interrupts us and leaves in his tight, small bathing suit. And it's like, bye, guys. I mean, clearly he doesn't think the boyfriend doesn't think anything of it. He's like, I'm just leaving you with this girl in the room. Who cares?
Yeah. You guys carry on, you know?
Yes. Whatever you were doing.
But it was a very strange moment for me. I'm like,
It was, but those are the strange moments that makes this show so interesting and original and like, makes you think, like, what was going on there? I personally believe he's just fully bisexual and doesn't, you know, it's just not as common back then for people to understand that he's completely into her, but also has this boyfriend.
Right.
Which,
right.
you know, and then we can discuss whether he's a jerk for
yes.
potentially wanting to cheat on him or whatever, but.
Right. But.
I just thought that was a really interesting complication.
Yeah, definitely.
So episode 3, oh, I loved this one.
Such a good.
So we're introduced to Benny Watts, played by Thomas Brody Singer of Love Actually fame. I love that this kid is everywhere. You know, he was on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
He's done quite a bit.
Benny.
That was at Cincinnati. So she's gone to Cleveland, Ohio, in addition to Kentucky. And then after she does, she gets a Life magazine interview and there's a photographer. There's so much here, right? Yes. So much. So this reporter comes and she's asking her, and the reporter is doing a shit job.
Yes.
She's just like taking every, again, stereotype. Oh, the orphanage must have been so depressing. You must have been so lonely. And she's like, I like being alone.
Mm-hmm.
And she says,
this whole quote, I have to read the whole thing. I love
this.
Yeah,
okay.
I like stopped, rewound. Like, chess isn't always competitive. Chess can also be beautiful. It was the board I noticed first. It's an entire world of just 64 squares. I feel safe in it. I can control it. I can dominate it. And it's predictable. So if I get hurt, I only have myself to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that. And I stopped mostly because this totally reminded me of, I'm talking about tennis twice in one episode. Wow. But it reminded me of something. Oh, this will come as no surprise to you that when I was a senior in high school, our coach made us write essay or this like just. It wasn't even supposed to be an essay. It was just like, tell me, you know, what you love about tennis. And I guess he read them all. And of course, he like asks me to read mine aloud to the whole team. Right. But it was basically, I wish I still had it, but it reminded me of this. Like, I'm super competitive, but what I talked about was the beauty of the game to me. And it was a lot about what happened when I stepped inside those squares, that square. Right. And how when I was in there, you know, exactly, like, I'm sure I didn't use these exact words, but that's what I meant. I played singles mostly at the time. Everything was on me. I liked it that way. Right. And I just loved the way I felt when I was in that box, if you will, those lines. And of course, I was probably, you know, had a lot of metaphors for the lines and life and everything else. But I get it. Like, I get what she's saying. And then the second thing it made me think of was, I'm like, this is sort of like a sports movie. And I know it's not a movie, but a sports show. Like, and I love sports movies, and I love them because there's always like two stories, right? There's the story of the sport itself, like the game, the competition, whatever you watch as the viewer that you do get invested in. But the reason people love them, right, even if you don't like sports, is because you get invested in the story of the player or the players, right? And that it's always about something bigger, you know, of life, you know? And that's the part lots of people like.
I was watching a little bit and my daughter walked in and she watched a couple of scenes and she goes – so is this just about chess? I'm like, it's about life.
Yes, which any great sports movie, show, whatever.
Should be.
Should be, right? Because yes. You're just as fascinated by, you know, the story of the person. And this, I think this show does such a good job of that. First of all, chess, to make chess, you know, interesting, right. Already hats off to them, right? This, that's it's right. Kind of easy to make a football movie. I'm sorry. There's a lot of drama. Yes. And action built into those. But built now to yeah. See the drama in chess. And yes. Then at the same time, this like portrait of her and, you know, her addictions and battling, you know, all that. I was like,
I know.
All of this came to me from that one quote. I'm like,
right.
Fucking amazing.
Which is also amazing because I barely noticed that. What
you
I
noticed the next one.
The next.
Yeah, time. I know.
Oh,
also good.
Yes. When the reporter says, have you heard of apophenia?
Oh, yeah.
Apophenia. Mm-hmm. And she says, no, what is it? And the reporter says, the finding of a pattern or meaning where other people don't. She said, creativity and psychosis often go hand in hand, as do genius and madness for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked up, she did describe what, but it has come to evolve to be implicit in something called the gambler's fallacy. Have you heard this?
Oh, no.
So this is the erroneous belief, and this is exactly what she was saying with the 64 squares and the control. Gambler's fallacy is the erroneous belief that if a particular event occurs more frequently than normal during the past, it is less likely to happen in the future or vice versa. When it has otherwise been established that the probability of such events does not depend on what has happened in the past. They're statistically independent. But the fallacy is commonly associated with gambling, where it may be believed, for example, the next roll of the dice is more likely to be a six because you haven't had any sixes. So she sees patterns, or she suggests, the reporter suggesting that Beth sees patterns, meaning if you do everything right, someone's not going to leave you. Or, right. You know, she thinks it is, she can correct the hurts, you know, imposed upon her by being perfect at chess.
Yeah.
She's trying to connect life and chess in ways that don't actually connect. You can be a perfect chess player and it's not going to bring anybody back from your past.
No.
So I was like, oof, that hurts. Yes.
Wow. And that makes me think even of that line that when this episode opens, there's that flashback to her and her mom, like playing by the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Her mom says the strongest person is the person who isn't scared to be alone. And, you know, that's kind of in her head, like just be by yourself. That's why she says it's just me out there. She thinks that. That's another way to control things. Like, I'll just be responsible for myself, not let anybody in, just do my thing on the chessboard, which, I mean, we'll talk about this. Her mother, the adopted mother, tries to kind of get her out of that a little, get her more intuition and relaxation and, like, get out of your head, basically.
Yes.
But
And she knows that. She's telling it from her own personal understanding because right after that scene with the Life magazine reporter, they cut to them at dinner and she says, you know, the mother is coughing and she says, I don't know why my body is intent on sabotaging my brain when my brain is perfectly capable of sabotaging itself.
Such a good line.
Right?
Oh, so good. Is that when they talk about how is that when she talks about how frustrated she is, Beth, with the article and the way it turned out?
Yes.
Was that when she was trying to read it to her? Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. That was when she tried to read it to her and she lost her place and then she said she couldn't really pick it up. And Beth said, don't go on. I'm tired of it. I'm famous just because I'm a girl.
Yeah.
So what did you think of that?
I thought that was amazing. I mean, her point is, I want to be the best chess player. And not the best female chess player. And she was also annoyed, rightfully so. She's like, I wanted to talk about, you know, Mr. Schneibel, and how I got into it in the orphanage and all they care about. Like and in that scene, it's so interesting. She just doesn't get it. She legitimately doesn't understand. I mean, she is a little naive, not very socially aware, but she just doesn't get it. Like, why can't they just talk about how I play chess? Why do they have to talk about me as a girl? Like, why? And I thought it was very genuine and express what people still think sometimes, right? I mean, celebrities complain about female celebrities, right? Actresses, whatever, yeah. complain about this all the time. You interview a man about his movie, you know, you ask him, you know, a certain set of questions. You ask me, like, what am I wearing? And, right. you know, how did I feel? You know, they still do right. that. And this, in this, when this is set, it was probably 100% common what right. she experienced. Fortunately, I think it still is a lot of times.
Yes, I know. I'm so on the fence about it, though. And I mean, this isn't, I understand what you're saying about the double standard of we yeah. want to talk to women about what they're wearing, and the men, it's like, how did you get into this role? Right? They're taken more seriously sometimes. But I did think she wasn't, she had a young person's, a very young person's yes. view on it shouldn't matter that I'm a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it does. We do know that it does matter, especially yes. we're now recording this when we have a vice president elect that's a woman for the first time mm-hmm. in this country's history, and it is a big deal. I mean, it's not the only thing that matters, but it is really important to see women in places where there are no women.
Yes.
And it is. It's an important thing.
I think the frustrating part was that interviewer was so horrible, and she wasn't, like, if she had said what you said, like, listen, I know you want to be the best and I want to write an article that showcases you and your talent, but the fact that you're a female in and the only one, and everyone you play is a man, that's a story. And that's yes. a story that needs to be told. You know, again, yes. I mean, this woman was annoying and gross. So, of course, like, it just predisposed
Yeah, although
me.
We don't see what she really ended up writing about. I no, mean, the, you're right. What she started to read before she got cut off was that she's out for blood. And
yeah,
I you're right. I am not sure where that article ended up going because right. they were talking about. I did think it was really interesting, and also another aspect of this, it shouldn't matter that I'm a girl, or it shouldn't be that important. And yet the next scene is her getting invited to the apple pies.
Oh, God. Yeah.
That scene spoke to me. I'm sure you didn't get that. That didn't resonate with you. I feel like even though you're more comfortable maybe with men, you also know how to be with women, and I don't.
Yeah.
And that was just such a, I was like, oh God, this is like me in all of high school. Like,
yeah. So no, it did not, like, yeah, it did not hit me the same way. I mean, them all singing along to, you know.
Oh God, I've never understood female ritual like in this way. Like, makeup, I don't know makeup, I don't know gossip, I don't do like
oh,
those
yeah.
kind of
oh yeah no then yeah it, then this is super it, weird for you, or just what it elicits, like, I mean, obviously yeah. if you weren't doing that literal thing, but yeah, slumber parties yeah. were not your thing.
No, not my thing. I don't know, and it's not at all. And I feel like they did a really good job portraying it. Because she's not, I'm above this. She doesn't have any feeling other than not understanding. She just doesn't get it.
Completely. And then when they start all singing, she literally looks at them like they're Martians. Like, what are they doing? Like, yes. she's confused, honestly.
Yes.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, but it is just confused. And I know I've said this to one of my friends, someone who's known me later in life, and I've always told her, like, I just didn't really get it, and I didn't have a lot of girlfriends, and I just, what does that mean? And this is what it means. This yeah. is what it means. I just didn't understand what we were supposed to be doing. I just didn't get it. I just, right, I don't right. know what chip is missing in me, but it's the same one that's missing in her. And I feel like that was really accurately portrayed. Again, when they invite her, she's like, yeah, that's me too. I'm like, yeah, I'll come. I want to come to your apple pies meeting.
And, yeah,
and also, these are not frivolous girls. These are apple pie as in pie in math. This right. is supposed to be...
Though all they do is talk about boys, but yeah.
Right. But she thought, this is somewhere I could fit in, right? She might not have gone if it was the captain of the cheerleading squad, and maybe she would have said, I don't really know what you guys do, so I'm not going to. This is a place where she accepted this invitation thinking she could belong. And then she got there and she was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm awkward, and I don't get it, and I feel like it's too late for me to learn now, so I'm just going to leave.
I'm just going to leave and go in the other room and look at the liquor cabinet, and then, you know.
Yes.
And then start drinking.
Yes.
Alone.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And go back to dreaming about chess. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yes. That's right. She finds alcohol does, helps her with that too.
Yes, exactly.
So then we get to the, is it the U.S. Open in Vegas, right?
Yeah. Is that, that, is that in the next episode though?
No, the next episode is Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Episode four is Mexico.
This is with her running with Benny.
Yes. Well, now she has to play him.
Yes.
She has to play against him now. Yes. Right. And that's right. They do run into each other. But before she runs into him or before she's playing with him against him, she is telling her mother how annoying he is. And her mother says, are you afraid of him? And she says, no, I'm not scared of Benny Watts. And she does say, though, Bargov is the one that she's scared of.
That's the only player she's afraid of is the Russian.
So that sets us up for what we will know, what will be to come. But then she actually runs into Benny and he tells her one of her moves. He saw a weakness in one of her moves or one of her matches that she hadn't seen. And man, does she lose her shit over that.
Gets in her head. Well, because remember, she had been studying her game prior to that and realized she has no weaknesses. She felt like she really didn't. And then for someone to point that out, she was unhinged after that.
Yes, and she had done it to other people, and she thought she was so smart for seeing it in theirs, and he didn't even watch it. He just read something, and he knew it. And
so do you think that's Benny Watts' signature move to try and mess with people ahead of time, or no? It was just they accidentally ran into each other, and he shared this to...
I think a normal person would not have been so thrown.
Yeah, it's
it
true.
It is the fact that she thinks she has such control over the board, like she says earlier in the interview. I think otherwise, I mean, if that was me, I would have been like, oh, I'm glad he saw that and told me. And now I can, you know, shore up that weakness, that weak spot.
Right.
I don't think I would have been sent into the tizzy that she was sent into.
The mental slide that happens after that.
Yes. And then she has to sit across from him, and we think she's really pulled it together, but she says, she has some great voice over here. I thought he could see what I was planning, that he could hear my heart beating. So she has to resign. Yes. Yeah. Well, right. Because she wanted to win. That's all she cared about. Mm-hmm. She wanted to win, and she lost sight of the whole game. And she says, he caught me completely off guard. I wanted to scream. And then she sees, as she's sitting across from him, she sees Mr. Scheibel come up, and that's when she knows. She's like, oh.
Yep. Yeah. You have to resign.
Yes. And she says, I didn't see what he was doing.
And that's what's so scary to her, right? Because that's the feeling of not being in control. I didn't see it coming. Like, and oh my God, what if this happens again? And what are these unexpected things that I haven't gone through in my mind? Right. And this really rocked her to her core. I mean, this is the first time we've seen
her lose.
I mean,
it doesn't happen. Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. Well, she didn't lose. She didn't. It was a
draw.
They ended up being
co-champions.
Co-champions, yes. But then the end of this episode is great too. She's telling this to her mother, and she's complaining about what she's heard about, what she's angry about is being blindsided in this way. And her mother wisely, I think, says, you can't finesse everything all the time. Nobody can. And she shoots back, you don't know anything about chess. And the mother says, I know what it feels like to lose. Yeah, I bet you do. Oof, that was a dagger.
That was harsh.
Grade,
yeah,
right?
Really harsh.
But then the mother does not fight back.
No.
She does not. She says, and now you do too.
Yeah. I love that because I would have gotten all, but she's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I don't, but now you do too.
Yep.
And then they hold hands.
Yeah, I know, in the car.
After, you know. So I think they're really, it's a very interesting relationship because at that point too, which we didn't discuss, you know, she's She's now taking a commission. She's sort of like her agent mm-hmm. in a way. But yep. again, talk about like subverting expectations. I thought when that relationship first started and she saw how much money Beth could make, that she was going to turn into the stage mom.
Yes,
that she was going to be, you know, a psycho about it and you must practice harder. And she starts taking more and more of the money. Get all of that. But none of that came to pass, right? It's just, you know, and she saw in Beth that she had all these unrealized dreams, right, of being a piano player and of traveling. And through Beth, these things are now happening for her. And so they both benefit so much from each other. And it actually turns into, I think, there's some dysfunction, obviously, but a nice relationship in a way. And I kept waiting for the weird thing again, but there wasn't.
Right. No, she wasn't going to take advantage of that. She was just happy that she was living through her in some way, as opposed to like most parents who try to live vicariously through their children want to correct their own mistakes. They want to see them go farther. They mm-hmm. want to see them do better. And she just seems to be happy to be along for this ride. I don't think she expected to get much of anything out of life at that point. When we first see her,
right.
we know she's in a pretty bad place, and especially then her husband leaves, and you know, she's just pretty much happy to be along for the ride.
Right.
Yeah. But then episode 4 is Mexico City, and we find out that the mother has a pen pal.
Beth, do you know what a pen pal is?
She's giddy and excited to meet this guy and connect with him. And it seems to be going pretty well for most of the episode. And she's a little bit more excited about that part of it than the chess part, which you could see this is why Beth's a little resentful, but I think Beth also is kind of just happy to have something. I mean, she's had a lot of loss in her life, and at least there's someone who will listen to her talk about her chess moves, and she'll talk about life with her.
Yeah.
It's got to be good enough, even though she's certainly not the attentive mother who's sitting there at every match. And
right. She gets a little tired of the Manuel stuff, like her partying and listening about it. But I think you're right. Yeah. She's like, whatever. She's got to focus on her chess anyway. So you go out and come home at 3 a.m. or whatever, mom. I love how she tells the twins, those twin guys, mm-hmm. I think she's having sex with him or something. I'm like, wow, okay, let's tell the twins.
Yes.
About your mom's sex life.
Which is also just, again, shows her kind of naivete or just like not being aware of. I'm sure they knew that. She didn't need to say it.
I know. I also
think the twins were like, duh.
Yes. I also think it was a nice contrast, her mother being so free and coming home at whatever hour, with Beth, who's sitting there going over
studying.
Her chess moves and studying a book. And that's where she says, you know, I don't know much about chess, but the times where you get the most applause is, you know, basically when you do a move quickly and when it seems to me you're acting from intuition. And so you're not going to read that in a book. And she's right. Why she's so gifted is that it is intuition and it is instinctive for her. And I love the part where she's like, you know, you should try to go relax, like go to the zoo, or you're in Mexico City and there's all these things you haven't seen. And like that really resonated with me, because like that is like growing up. I mean, like my parents had to tell me those types of things, like, like you're way too hard on yourself. Put the book down, like you're doing fine. And I'm like, no, but I must study more. And they were like, no, you need to like go outside and do something else or whatever. I know. Nerd alert.
Yeah. But what I was thinking is, but she just goes out and gets wasted from cart beers.
Yeah. So that they were not encouraging necessarily, but I was thinking more when I was younger, but I thought I really liked that. I liked their yin and their yang, these two, the mom and her.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. I didn't see it that way. I see it as like Beth doesn't get it. And she, I don't know. It's either she's in control or she completely
out of control.
Relinquishes control to substances. Yeah.
Right. But and, I think, yeah, how she executes her mom's advice, you're right, doesn't work well because she doesn't just right. go relax and, like, you know, take her mind off things. She like no. annihilates herself. And I'm not sure that's her, what her mom was telling her to do.
But her mom also doesn't seem she has the control issues that she has.
Yes, correct.
And we see that aside moment with Mr. Scheibel, which we hadn't seen.
Yeah.
Right, where he says it's two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. You have your gift and you have what it costs.
Yes.
You have so much anger in you. You have to be careful. And it's like one side is control and the other side is anger. Those are the two modes that she has. And so she is watching her mother, who said she was coming down with something and couldn't go to her match. She then sees her later on dancing with, what was it, Manuel. Mm-hmm. And she's looking, it's a little stalkerish, it's a little creepy and scary, but you see she's mad. She doesn't hold on to it for long, but I think that's because she's able to just throw herself back into the chess matches.
So you're saying that the two sides of the coin are control and anger? Interesting. Yes. So Beth and yeah. I have a lot more in common than I thought. Wow. Holy shit. Because I didn't see it because yeah. I don't have the addiction piece and her messiness part. But
right.
But wow, yeah. No wonder I resonated so much with the 64 squares and the, yes. and the control. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Something for everyone in this.
I know. I love it. Yes. So.
Then she plays that. Yeah, go ahead.
So she does go get drunk. I mean, it does seem, and this is where Corinne pops back into the narrative.
Everybody gets a turn.
That's right. Which is because even though it's not healthy and functional, it does. Going and getting obliterated, it does take your mind off of the other things. And so she does kind of come back the next day. She gets drunk. She takes the rest of the day off and she comes back the next day, and her first match, she crushes the guy. And the announcer, I loved the announcer in Spanish. She said she moved with such deadly accuracy,
yes.
such measured control. She crushed him like an egg.
I love that. I was like, yes, that's where like the whole sports movie comes in. I'm like, even this guy describing chess, I was like, crush him.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. But then she sees Borgov and she's it's getting in her head, and he's not even playing her. He's playing someone else and she's watching, and they ask, will he defend himself or will he counterattack? And then this becomes a theme I think that's going to keep playing out is, do you defend yourself or do you counterattack? And how her game is all attack.
All attack. Yep.
Right. But in between, she plays the 13-year-old boy. Now, here is where she might have learned a real lesson, Beth. Mm-hmm. And not essentially what her mother was telling her, but she had to make it her own. She's intimidated by his age, by his mm-hmm. assuredness. And it's really that kind of cockiness that is, he doesn't know better. He's really good at a young age, and you don't know better than to not be. And it is in her head.
Yeah.
And that first day, she is wilting. She is really struggling. And then they play for so long that they adjourn it, and they come back the next day. And somehow the next day she gets it. And she he's going so quickly, and she just walks away. When he's not... When it's not her turn, she walks away. And then she doesn't just walk away. She like
sashays
her skirt. Yes.
She's like, doo, doo, doo. Yes. Well, you say suddenly the next day she gets it. I think what happened is because when they adjourned for that day, he started talking, about, in America, do you really have movies you can see in cars? And she realized she was talking to a child, I think.
Right.
She was like, my God, this kid who wants to know about drive-in movies, he's just like, what am I doing? I think when she came back, she saw him then for what he was. And I think some of the intimidation dropped away.
Right. I'm going to be playful and I'm going to not really care.
And it totally messed with him.
Yes. Totally messes with him. And that game ends pretty quickly. And it's just a reminder for us watching and for her in the moment that that it's the chess at that high level is more than just moves, and it's a mental, yeah, right? Yeah.
And like all sports, though, really.
Yes. Yeah.
There's the mental element. Mm-hmm. And what about her saying to him, well, what, you know, he's saying he wants to be a champion at 16. Right. And she's like, well, then what are you going to do? And he was like, I do not understand. Like, I do not understand. Yeah. But, you know, he's just confused. And, mm-hmm. and, but is that her sort of questioning herself? Like, what happens after you reach these goals that you set for yourself? Then what?
Yeah, I don't know. I was wondering that too. But
she's like, you're the best I've ever played. And then when she walks off, until you play Borgov. I mean, that started reminding me of Rocky. What is it? Rocky IV, whatever the one is against the Russian. And I'm like, this is still reminiscent of that. Until you play Borgov.
Yes. We're constantly reminded of that threat. And not only because he's just a great player, but also because she is scared of him. And we know this. Yeah. And she's even gone so far as to take Russian, like you said. You know, at the beginning, so she could learn the language and not be at a disadvantage, but not feel. Yeah.
Good thing she did, though, because then the next scene, after she realizes she's playing Borgov, she's in the elevator with him. And if she didn't know Russian, she wouldn't be able to know what they were talking about.
Right, which I don't know if that's good or bad.
It probably would have been better. It's true. Yeah. But I hate when you think people are talking about you in another language and you don't know the language. No, this definitely got in her head. Although I thought it was interesting when Borgov says, like, you know, all the people working for him were like, you know, you'll destroy her. Or, you'll get her with jet lag and all. And he's like, she is an orphan. And losing isn't an option for her. So she will fight. As she has nothing else to live for.
Yes.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Shira, but I also liked that.
Yeah, and I liked their perceptions too. She's all attack. She doesn't watch her back. Mm-hmm. She's angry. She's a drunk, and she has to take all this and go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's an orphan. Losing it isn't an option. She's a survivor. So he has more respect for her than the other two cronies, I guess, do. But then she plays him, and that was tough. That was, she's just, you could tell right from the start that she is, you know, not mentally there. She's too in her head. She's too nervous. She's too scared. And of course, he's got the advantage because he's the white player, and you know, it was over before it began on many levels. I think so.
Exactly.
But then she goes back to tell her mother about it. And I loved what she was saying.
Right?
Yeah. That his moves were so obvious.
And unimaginative, she said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was surprised by how unimaginative his moves are.
Which, so bureaucratic.
She said. Yes. Yes. Almost like, how dare you beat me with those moves? Like, they're not worthy.
Right. And but meanwhile, all it had done, she said, I looked at his face. There was no doubt, no weakness.
Yeah.
And that's something that when you're not being creative, when you're just following a plan, A to B to C, this is what works, you know, pull out this right from the book. Then it's easy to have no room for doubt. There's no weakness. It's just is what it is.
Right.
And she doesn't play that way. That's not the way her mind works. That's not what she's impressed by. That's not her goal. Mm-hmm. So she was taken by it. But we know how she'll come back and attack again, which is some good foreshadowing. And also, like, this, it won't be just who's the better chess player, it will be who works on what plane. And we see now that they've divided. He's very classic, and she takes pride in her creativity and her imagination,
intuition, and all that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But she's telling this all to her mother, who's not listening.
Oh, geez. She's dead. Oh,
she's dead.
Yeah, that was damn. I'm like, I'm so wrapped up in this big loss for her and
how she's describing it so well. And then we're like, I'm like, wait, what? Oh, no.
Yeah. And then they drop that on us. Damn. I know.
I mean, she was coughing a lot and sick, and now it all makes sense, but I still just, I don't know. I thought something bad might happen to her at some point, but I was caught off guard too.
I was definitely caught off guard. I didn't know if something would or wouldn't. I don't think I would have been surprised either way, but it was just the timing of it right after they just did a 1-2 punch on us. So that's how it ends.
Maz.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it ends with her toasting. Doesn't it end with her toasting the martini to the empty airplane seat next to her? Like to her mom, like cheers. Either way.
Right.
We're at the end. She's lost her mom. She's now on like her third martini on the plane and is well equipped with a lot of green pills. So,
yes, I know. Yeah. Well, so that's one thing I want. I think that ends perfectly with two things that we still want to talk a little about. One for me is the addiction. Mm-hmm. It's a little fuzzy for me. I'm not sure what her thing is. I mean, does she use it for gameplay, or is it a way to kind of get out of her brain? Because those two things seem at odds, right? If you're taking it, like, believe you do better, you play better impaired because it cuts off whatever and helps you focus. That's at odds with just, you know, downing some beers and forgetting about things for a while.
I think you're right. I think it's inconsistent. I think the green pills seem to be something that when she takes them, they help her game and help her focus during it. But then the drinking to excess and all of that, that seems more of like the, how can I erase my pain and annihilate myself so I don't have to think about things, which is completely different.
Right. So yes, I don't completely know different.
Which she hasn't had the green pills in a while, though.
She hasn't really had. Did she took it with Benny?
With Benny, right? Yeah. But like, that's like of all of these matches we've seen, I think that's the only one she did take something for.
Well, she took it in Kentucky, and she took it in Vegas. Yeah. So, I mean, you're right, though. It has certainly, out of all the matches we can assume she's been playing and winning, it seems she only pulls it out for
the big ones.
Yeah, for the ones where she has something extra to have to overcome. But she didn't do it for Borgov.
Well, look how that turned out. No.
Right, right.
Yeah. So I know. It's hard. I do think that the green pills seem to be helpful, or she thinks they're helpful for her matches, but all the drinking and whatnot seems to be like an escape.
Well, the chess is the escape. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on the first one.
An escape from the chess in a way.
No, I think they're both ways to not feel and to control. And so that's, you know, those are the escapes, the chess and the drinking, I guess. But then it all came from the tranquilizers at the orphanage. So I don't know. It's a little fuzzy, but it's not taking me out of it. It's not really I wasn't watching it going, well, what, you know, I just had like a moment of pause and I was curious. Mostly I'm curious where it's going to go, because I do wish it was more of a clear parallel that the chess is doing the same thing as the alcohol for her. It's a way to make her forget about all of her pain and all the things she's scared of and never being loved and always being left, and those serve the same purpose. What about the mother?
Oh, the mother, Marielle Heller. So I didn't know who this was when I was watching it.
No, neither did I until
and
you told me.
I guess why would we, right? I mean, she's a pretty well-known director. She directed A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood with Tom Hanks.
And Tom Hanks, right.
Yeah, and Can You Ever Forgive Me, starring Melissa McCarthy. And I think she got a lot of buzz for A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood because he was nominated for Best Actor. And I think they got some other nominations, but she didn't get a Best Director nom. And it was the same year where a lot of women were overlooked, like every year. Right. But it was just, I'm like, wait,
yes, that was a year that felt felt even more egregious that year. And that Melissa McCarthy one really got a lot of hype too. And I don't, it got kind of lost in the shuffle at the end, but I didn't realize she did that one as well. Wow.
Yeah. And so she doesn't normally act, and that's why I was so surprised. I wouldn't have thought, again, I don't know that we all know directors by face anyway, but so yeah, it's Mariel Heller. And I read a couple articles about why she decided to take this very rare acting role when she's normally behind the camera. And part of it, which I love for purposes of this podcast, is that she just thought this character was so complex and so complicated. Yeah. And, you know, I love that because she said, you know, in the movies that I write and direct, I really look for characters, particularly female characters, who are complex and surprising and who hold many truths at one time. And part of what she loved about Alma, this role, was that she was like that. She's somebody who lives with a huge amount of pain. She said she has this dream that she never was able to fulfill of being a pianist. She wanted to be a mother and she was never able to fulfill that. She's living in a loveless marriage. She's really a victim of her error. There's something so tragic about her, and yet she's resilient. She's smart. Mm-hmm. She's cunning. She has this other side to her that gets woken up by seeing Beth pursuing her dream. And I love that. I mean,
yes.
And so we always talk, and of course we want to talk about things on this show that are created by women and directed by women. As you said earlier, we want to see when men do it, how they're doing it. But the fact that this director looked at this and saw like, this is, and said, this is like what I like to make. You know what I mean? This is what I look for when I write and direct. And you know what? Hell yeah, I'll act, even though I haven't acted in however many years. I mean, she's also friends with Scott Frank, the showrunner and creator and director. She is. She's friends with him, and he tried to get her in a movie he was doing at one point. And then in Godless, which I've never heard of this series, but apparently it's got a huge following.
Yes.
On Netflix.
Yes. I've never watched it, but I've heard.
Yeah, and he wanted her to be in that. So he's been circling around, she says, for a while, and he helped her when she was directing Can You Ever Forgive Me? So they're obviously friends, but she's like, but I wouldn't have done it except that I read this script and I was so blown away by Alma. She's complex and rich and seemed like such a challenge that she was like, you know what? Why not? Which I thought was very cool. And I just think their mother-daughter relationship was an very interesting one, you know, that you don't normally see quite like this. So, that was an interesting sidebar on Mariel Heller.
I loved her character. I really did. I loved the way she held so many things to be true at the same time. She was trying, but also not very good. And she drank way too much and wasn't present, but she was also more than it Beth had in anywhere else. And she had moments where she stood up and shined as her mother, protecting her, like when the reporter is going off on her being an orphan and she kind of steps in. And
she had
some great moments, and I thought the dynamic together was impressive, and then also just her character alone I thought was so well drawn. So
and this, I don't know Scott Frank either, and perhaps I think movie buffs would be horrified by me, but I mean he's got two Oscar nominations for Best Adapted Screenplay. He did Out of Sight and Logan, but he wrote Little Man Tate, Get Shorty, Minority Report.
Out of Sight, George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez, 1998. Yes.
It is. Look at that.
Yes.
And he got an Oscar nomination for that? Wow.
I'm a huge fan of that movie.
Yes, see? And I love Little Man Tate. I remember that.
See, now I think of that, no wonder. I think of that as a Steven Soderbergh movie. but Scott Frank wrote it.
I didn't know that Walter Tevis, who wrote the book, that he, three of his six novels were made into major motion pictures, one of which was The Color of Money. Hello, Martin Scorsese and Paul Newman and Tom Cruise. Like, didn't know that.
So he cares about weird gameplay savants, huh?
I get, well, that's true. So that's, you're right. Actually, that's the author of the book, but you're right. He does. Yeah. I mean, a couple of his other ones. But I guess The Queen's Gambit, like I said, three of his six novels were made into motion pictures, each garnering Academy Award nominations, which is pretty crazy. But The Queen's Gambit was one that was much less known, but has like a cult following among his readers. And they tried for 40 years to make this movie. 40 years. What? Like, it's been...
What?
When it first came out in 1983, the book, the film rights were bought immediately. And it was... There was all these different directors attached to it. Right. There was always buzz around it. And it just languished like so many things do. Like, and then guess who was going to direct it?
Who? Tell me.
Heath Ledger. Okay, before he died, Heath Ledger was going to direct the adaptation right after he had played the Joker.
Okay.
He was going to direct it, and it was going to star Ellen Page as Beth Harmon.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not sure about that, but he was so interested in it because everyone knows he was a user of prescription drugs and had addiction issues, and he really related to Beth's character. And he was going to make the movie, but then he died. Wow. I mean, right when it was about to. And then it's been like a passion project for Scott Frank, who's been trying to get it made. And so he's the writer, director, and executive producer. But it's crazy. I know. Wow. A lot of talent behind this is what I'm saying. Yeah, a lot.
Yes. Well, I'm glad. I mean, it's obviously...
It's showing.
It is. It's showing that I guess, the underlying... messages, if nobody's interested in your stuff, it's probably not the stuff. It's just how things work, because this is excellent.
Yeah.
And everyone I talk to is obsessed. Well, I can't wait for the last three.
I know.
I'm so excited.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think she's going to play Borgoff again. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
But she's got to see Benny again too, right? She's
got
to face off against him, because that's Town says at the end, oh, you'll have a chance again against him. So,
yeah, she's got to go back and exercise those demons with those two.
Yeah, but without her mother. I wonder what's going to happen.
I know. And I don't know if the pills are going to be her friend more now. I don't know where this is going, but...
Her friend. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Oh, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. All right. We'll be back.